Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. Jerome Powell said the central bank of the Fed must continue to raise interest rates to stop inflation from becoming a permanent aspect of the U.S. economy, sending U.S. markets into pain and tailspin. Markets tumbled 3%. This coming at a time when Americans have to pay more for decade goods, and inflation in the U.S. is at a four-decade high. So where do prices go from here? Interest rates, that is. Is September truly the worst month for investing? We also figure all that out. To help us unpack these questions, let's welcome Cheng Chai Sin, head of investment from Provident, onto our show. Good morning, Chai Sin.
Good morning, Michelle.
So in his Jackson Hole speech, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell has warned that the central bank is not going to back off in its fight against rapid inflation, mentioning that it will cause pain, and that's to be expected. And this has spurred investors to weigh on the implications of higher interest rates. So what is your outlook for rates after the speech at Jackson Hole?
Yeah, that's really the key, isn't it? The Fed Chair, Jerome Powell, he was really much more hawkish than expected when he delivered his keynote speech. Mm-hmm. So instead of the dovish pivot that the market was hoping for, because the market really was pricing in rate cuts next year, he emphasized that bringing back price stability and inflation down to the Fed's long-term target of 2% is really their number one priority, because they feel that that would enable, you know, strong labor market participation, which is, happens to be the Fed's other mandate, because they have a dual mandate of, employment and price stability. So, you know, he really emphasized that that would require using all the tools at the Fed's disposal to bring demand and supply into better balance, and that, you know, reducing inflation would require a period of below trend growth. And so that really put the Fed at odds with the recent market view that the Fed would cut rates next year, so which is why markets started to fall. And I think, you know, it's really likely that the Fed is going to keep rates very restrictive next year, even though growth is likely to slow. In fact, is somewhat slowing if you look at some of the numbers, in an effort to bring prices to a more manageable level. So the current forecast, he mentioned this in his speech too, is about for rates to reach about 3.75% to 4% in 2023. And I think after those comments from the Fed chair, it's likely that rates are going to get there, maybe even a little higher, and they're likely to stay there for at least the whole of 2023, maybe even sometime to 2024. So it remains to be seen if that's the level that we need to actually get inflation under control. But I think, you know, what we're likely to see is rates are going to go up to at least that 3.75%, 4% level, and they're not going to come down anytime soon.
So Barron's canvassed 8 Wall Street strategists to get their read for the investment outlook for the rest of the year. What is it, 4 months left for the rest of the year? And the average target amongst the group was S&P 500, about 4185, so about 6% up from recent levels. That's a bit of a large span considering where it's ranging, 3600, 4800. What are your views for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I think we are in for a pretty volatile period. You know, right now we are going to have the U.S. CPI reading coming out, I think, sometime this week. Mm-hmm. Later in the month, we will get the Fed rate decision. Along with the Fed rate decision, we will also get the Fed's latest projections for where they think rates will go. Mm-hmm. Because all we talked about and all that Jerome Powell mentioned was based on the previous meeting's projections. And, you know, they're not going to communicate the latest projections any earlier. Mm-hmm. So all that will come into play. I think we are also going to get a period of earnings that will start to reflect the higher rates, the pullback in sort of consumer spending, and also reflecting, you know, the sentiment around the fall in markets. So we're likely to see a more challenging period. I'm not so optimistic that the stock market will finish, or rather the S&P 500 will finish above 4,000, but I guess that remains to be seen. But I'm leaning more towards it will be a more challenging period heading towards the end of the year. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, of course.
All right, we'll track that. Chai-Sun, hiring in the U.S. came in slightly ahead of consensus, alongside increased labor force participation, wage growth coming in little under forecast. So if we take a look at the non-farms payrolls, the U.S. Department of Labor puts this out in seasonally adjusted terms. I think you're looking at 315,000 in August, 315,000. That's above the increase of 300,000, which economists had expected. Why do investors look so closely at the non-farms payroll report? And in this particular context, why is this important?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, we did see the numbers come in at 315,000 versus expectations of around 200,000. The unemployment rate actually rose to 3.7% versus expectation of 3.5%. And hourly earnings rose, but it was less than expected. So it came in at 0.3% versus the 0.4% of expectations. And labor participation, most importantly, rose to 62.4%. which is the highest level since the pandemic started. And so what this signals is that the labor market is still holding strong. Mm. There continues to be job creation, lessening the concerns that recession is imminent, right? Because typically most recessions involve job losses. And with hourly earnings, though, rising less than expected, there is some hope that the price or rather inflation pressures from wage growth might be moderating. So, and with the higher labor participation rate, meaning that more people are now looking for work, there are more workers available to hire, maybe the inflationary pressure from wages and lack of workers might see some moderation going into the end of the year. Because as you know, right now, there's a big switch from goods to services. So a lot of the inflation is also coming through from services because a lot of businesses have found it in the U.S., well, even in Singapore, have found it very hard to hire people, right, especially for the service industry. So, you know, this is key, and this is what why investors have been looking at this report a bit more closely than usual, is because any reduction in inflationary pressure is going to be something that investors are going to watch keenly, because that's really going to be something the Fed is looking at regarding rate hikes. And, you know, as you can see, the fact that higher expectations of higher rates have already brought the markets down so much in the past couple of days. So, you know, anything that can ease this inflationary pressure, you know, is something that investors are going to be watching keenly. And we know there are two ways for inflation to come down. So, you know, not just demand falling, but also supply to increase. And in this case, if supply of workers increases, then maybe wage pressures will also not be as high. And that will also allow for inflation to moderate somewhat. And maybe the Fed will not be as pressured to raise rates as high.
So if you look at the non-farms payroll, what is it telling us about Powell's approach to getting inflation under control and whether he's managing the costs to American households and businesses right?
Well, I don't think you can really see that from the payrolls. But I think what you are seeing is that I think as the stimulus measures, you know, from the pandemic start to roll off, and I think as price pressures for the consumer continue to bite, I mean, we are seeing that maybe more people are coming out to look for work again. Mm-hmm. There's an increase in the labor participation rate. So some of that, you know, is forcing workers to seek employment again. And that, in a way, is indirectly helping, because if businesses are able to find more workers, then they won't have to raise wages as high. And if wages don't go up as much, you know, we can avoid that wage price inflationary spiral that economists and the Fed is wary of, especially since that happened in the 70s.
The Volcker era. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. After posting a third consecutive monthly decline in August, oil prices have started September sliding as well, so a similar fashion. Some say this is due to recessionary fears. Others say it's largely seasonal. What do you make of oil prices? Why have they been falling? And what impact could this have on inflation?
Yeah, so they've fallen from their recent peak of around $120 a barrel earlier in the year to about now, it's about $87 a barrel. This is the WTI prices, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you mentioned, it really is fears of a recession, lower demand, slowing growth. But particular is actually, I think, the lockdowns in China due to the continued COVID pandemic. You know, those are driving the prices down because China is a key and a large importer of oil. And it's not just for consumption, but, you know, raw materials for many of the products that they manufacture. So they are a huge consumer of oil. And, you know, any slowdown in the economy in China definitely will have an impact on the oil price. Yeah, the other part of it is recessionary fears in the US and Europe because, you know, inflation is causing the consumer to have to stretch their dollar. So that does reduce demand for driving somewhat. It is also slightly seasonal because as we go into winter, people drive less. The roads are, you know, covered in snow and slippery. So it might be a bit less demand for gasoline or petrol, you know. But while this might help with some of the inflationary pressure, you know, in general, there continues to be, you know, a shortage of oil in a way. Russian supply continues to be curtailed. You know, now they have a price cap and so there might be, you know, even less supply of Russian oil. And OPEC, they're meeting today and apparently they might be considering production cuts because they want to push the price of oil up. So, you know, while the price of oil might be coming down, it might not necessarily be the entire story on inflation because apart from oil, there continues to be inflation in Europe because gas is in short supply, especially since now the Nord Stream 2 with the gas supply from Russia is just entirely cut off. It doesn't just affect households but also industry because German factories are quite dependent on the gas for their energy and, you know, they're forced to pay higher costs for energy which might continue to feed into prices of their finished goods. So, and it's also not just energy, but there's also food inflation because the war in Ukraine continues to drag on. And as we know, Ukraine and Russia, they are huge suppliers of potash, which is used to grow crops. And aside from that, it's also the fact that Ukraine, the wheat harvest is totally decimated. So, you know, all these various factors still continue to make inflation a very tricky question. So while the fall in price of oil does help to reduce some of the inflationary pressure from one source, there's still going to be different factors like the gas and energy prices, the food, and the shortage of labor that I mentioned earlier. All these continue to drive inflationary pressure. So, you know, it will take more than just lower oil prices to bring inflation down meaningfully. But at least, yes, it will help somewhat.
I read an interesting article on volatility, and it said that stock markets haven't been this volatile since 2008, with intraday volatility looking at swings of 1% or more for the S&P 500. 87% of trading days this year have experienced swings that elevated. So let's get your views, Chai Sun. Are you expecting stock markets to remain volatile this month? That's an easy one.
Yes, I think they will be. I think it will be. I think we head into quite a lot of data coming up. Like I mentioned earlier, the CPI readings are coming. You know, the Fed rate decision is coming. I mean, then the continued challenges in China with COVID-19 and, you know, we were getting news of the economy slowing there. So I think we can expect stock markets will continue to be volatile because, they're looking to price in some of these events and it's definitely a very uncertain time for the world. So yes, it will be volatile.
We saw that one. All right, let's turn our attention to California. It's the economy that ranks as the world's fifth largest and earlier this week released a bill, its most aggressive effort to confront climate change. Lawmakers approved a record $54 million in climate spending and they passed restrictions on oil and gas drilling and a mandate that California stop adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere by 2045. Amidst all this volatility, people and listeners are wondering, you know, are there bright spots? So are there companies likely to benefit from this mega bill?
definitely, I mean, there will always be winners and losers in business and in the stock market in every different period. So they really passed a very big bill to tackle the climate change. I think the new part is, you know, they're forcing 90% of retail electricity to be sourced from renewables by 2040. Which is setting sort of like hard targets to reach their 100% renewable goal by 2045. You know, they're bringing forward some deadlines forcing state agencies to source the energy from renewables by 2035 so that they can reach their net zero goals by 2045. They're also looking to phase out the sale of petrol cars by 2035. So, you know, if you look at this, this push is definitely going to benefit companies that provide renewable energy or technology to generate renewable energy. So makers of wind turbines, or hydroelectric equipment, or solar cells like maybe First Solar, batteries for EVs, etc., all very likely to benefit. Of course, the very obvious ones, you know, if you're not going to sell petrol cars, companies like Tesla or Rivian are likely to benefit from this legislation. However, it has to be said that there's still quite a bit of time before, you know, it comes into effect. So there's time for other companies to adapt. If you look at many of the traditional automakers, they are also making a push into electric vehicles. Right now, you know, a lot of vehicles are going hybrid, and eventually, I'm sure they will try to make full electric vehicles too, and they will make it very competitively. So, you know, whenever there's an opportunity, there will always be competition. So, I guess, you know, investors need to make sure they do their own due diligence and understand the whole picture before investing in any firm. I mean, similarly for it may seem like suppliers of renewable energy, such as NextEra and Brookfield, you know, are likely to benefit from the push into 100% renewable energy. But if you look at an oil major like Shell, they're investing heavily, heavily into becoming a green and renewable energy supplier. You know, so, you know, they might also benefit, you know, as they look to remain relevant, you know, in a changing world. So, you know, at Provident, you know, we always think diversification is key. Mm-hmm. And we actually have ESG portfolios that specifically focus on reducing exposure to emissions. And we still have very good diversification because those portfolios are still very, very globally diversified. But of course, however, any portfolio that runs exclusions or negative screening, such as, you know, reducing emissions, it will always be less diversified than the market portfolio. But, you know, we feel that this is a cost that is justified, as reducing emissions is something we all need to do our part to help take care of the earth.
Great to hear about these portfolios. Are they overweight in the US?
They're market weight. So they will be still, you know, they're market weight US and the rest of the world, according to market cap.
Really interesting. Thank you very much, Chai-Sun, for the insight this morning. Cheng Chai-Sun is Head of Investment at Provident with me here on Money & Me.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.